It's the True Faith Podcast, Newcastle United 1, Crystal Palace 0 on an excellent afternoon at St James's Park, results-wise anyway. Newcastle currently find themselves before the Sunday fixtures 6th in the Premier League, which bizarrely puts us at odds with Mark Lawrenson's prediction table, which has us bottom. But, you know, I'm not possibly suggesting that Mark Lawrenson doesn't know what he's talking about, you know, or to any of his pals, the likes of Merson, etc., who do the predictions. Si, how big a win is it for Newcastle?
Massive win. It shouldn't be. It should have been a textbook win against a shite Crystal Palace team. But we saw that they beat Chelsea last week. We also know what we're like in terms of if there's a game that we're just meant to win, normally we don't win it. So it's really refreshing to see we just get the 3 points in the bag for change and not really have any problem with it. So it's massive, 6th in the league. And it kind of makes up now, I think, if you... Obviously, on one hand, if we'd just got something at Brighton and Huddersfield, who knows where it could be. But on the whole, if you look at just all of our performances so far, it's really, really encouraging. Like, over the space of the nine games, it's an excellent start. We've only conceded eight goals. Like, it's just unreal. Really pleased.
Yeah.
Lots of enthusiasm here today from the lads. No one hanging.
Yeah, it's a long day and night after the match. But I don't know. Is there another city, do you think, that just gets us pissed when the football team wins? Like, a good hour and a bit after the game yesterday, we were still trying to get in pubs that just weren't absolutely rammed. We tried some just ridiculously rogue shouts like Charles Gray, because we're like, no one will go to the Charles Gray, rammed.
Absolutely rammed.
No one will go to this mental one in the Quayside we went to, rammed. The whole city's just collectively been on it since 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Ben, you know, we were obviously all at the game together. It wasn't a good... I was going to say it wasn't the best game. It was not a good game of football. Does it matter?
No, it doesn't. But obviously, we'd much rather go there and see we're taking a team of Palace's ability apart. But a lot of things have to click for that to happen, and obviously it didn't. I mean, I think we're in the Premier League. Most teams are good enough to be able to stop the other team from playing. It's like the standard thing you need to be able to do at that level. So you have to appreciate there's going to be a lot of games where a team just comes to try and grind out a point, which they need all the points they can get at this stage after the start they've had. So what I wasn't surprised by the standard of the game. I think it's two teams that probably do the best work counter-attacking when they're not having to sort of take the game to the other team. And it was a very similar game again to the other games we've had this season of sort of opposition that are that standard in Brighton, Swansea to an extent, the Huddersfield game. So it was very tight. It was always going to be, if there was a goal, that was going to be the difference maker. And I think having said that, I think we shaded it, and we deserve to well, out of the two teams, if anyone was going to nick it, there was only going to be one team that could do it.
Yeah, Palace lined up with I know this sounds a bit strange, but a very defensive 4-4-2. We were in the pub before the match talking about, you know, surely Hodgson will not play only four in midfield like he did against Chelsea last week, but it's almost like a 4-6 formation, and then Townsend and Zaha move into more attacking positions when they've got the ball. So they were really, I mean, to be fair to Palace under Hodgson, compared to the kind of mess he took over, they are very well drilled, they are very organised, and it was really hard to break them down. And as you alluded to, Ben, their threat is the counter-attack, and I think that's one of the reasons we saw us in the first half particularly kind of willing to play their game almost of very, you know, lack of urgency getting forwards, or a lack of... you know, willingness to move a lot of men ahead of the ball. That was because Palace's only threat really came from, would come from counter-attacks, and did come from counter-attacks. And, you know, they didn't have a shot on target yesterday. Rob Elliott did well in the first half to get down and stop a ball going across the face. But apart from that, he had absolutely nothing to do. Spironi at the other end didn't have much to do. He had to make a couple of saves from Diarmé and Shelvey. But overall, that this win puts us 11 points clear at Palace. It's a big gap after 9 games, 11 points. And, you know, that with the games we've got coming up against Burnley and Bournemouth in particular, you'd really like to be going into late November. There's an international break as well to come after those two, I think. you'd really like to be going into those the games in late November quite far away from the relegation zone. And yeah, it wasn't a great game to watch by any means, but I don't know, Si, I just felt that once that goal went in the seat, like in the Upper Gallagher way, where we were in Block V, like it was basically akin to Norwich at home, the celebrations last season. Like everyone just went absolutely nuts. Do you know why we're going as nuts? Because you just knew we'd win the game. Yeah. There was no way that team, our team, were going to let Palace back into that. And it's almost like Si alluded to before, the fact we've only conceded 8 goals in 9 games. You know, we haven't played any of the supposed, I mean, the top 6. I was going to say away from home.
Oh, right.
Not that I think we're going to get done 3-4-0, but obviously you have to play those games to prove that point. Norman said in his, or Si, did you say in your match preview that teams who concede about the 1 goal a game mark are normally champions?
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying we're going to be champions this season.
Garth Crooks is very much saying that.
Yeah, if you only concede 1 goal a game, you tend to finish in the top 3 or less. So we're on very good form so far defensively. I thought we were excellent defensively. I didn't even notice. I've just been looking. 3 of the lads got booked. 3 of the defence.
Did they?
I had no idea that happened. Lascelles, Lejeune, and...
I think, did Marino get booked?
Marino as well.
Yeah, Marino.
Manquillo did. Yeah.
Manquillo's was a farce, I thought. Yeah. It was a complete piss take.
Yeah, it's never yellow.
But yeah, absolutely right. They had no shots. Did they have a shot?
I think Townsend hit one just over, but that's it.
And they had that, which made it on the highlights because there was nothing else to show. The sort of cross from Zaha that Elliot picked up. Like, it was. I don't know what it was like to be at the match if you weren't pissed. I was pissed, so I was really enjoying it, even though it was, looking back, quite a bad game. So it's an advert for having a few more pints for the game when you know you're playing someone like Palace, but. Yeah, I think over the course of the season we've done what we needed to do. Like West Ham, we took them apart, as you say, Ben. It's nice to see us take teams apart, but I think Rafa did the right thing in respecting Palace. They had Zaha back, who is a threat. Townsend's a threat. We couldn't just go gung ho and expect to tear them apart because they've got Hodgson in. He's reorganised them, and it just had to be another one of those games where we worked really hard and got the goal that we deserved. But I don't think it's fair to get frustrated at that. I was pleased, but again, I was pissed, so it was really enjoyable.
I think just on that point, I think it's important where we are realistically, the ambitions we've got, first and foremost, to stay in the division. You need to be keeping yourself in games, and we've talked about this a number of times, I think, on the podcast already, but we're staying in these games. We're giving ourselves opportunities to nick points here and there, and that's the most important thing. It would have been a travesty to drop all 3 points in that game yesterday. That never occurred to me the way we set the team out, and I think that's the way Rafa's gonna build the team and sort of build the plan on the back of just remaining games and just sort of keep it as tight as possible and just wait for our quality to shine. And we've got some players in the team that can do that.
Yeah. In terms of the kind of game it was, it's almost another box ticked, because if you look at the West Ham and Stoke games, we were excellent in both of those games. I know Stoke could have nicked a point at the end, but we fully deserved to win those games. We created loads of chances. I thought 2-1 and 3-0 didn't reflect our dominance in those games. And obviously Swansea away, it was a close game. We could have scored more, they could have scored, but particularly at home, it's almost nice to win one of those scrappy games, which a lot of people on social media have been correctly pointing out. We'd have lost those in the McLaren, lost that game in the McLaren yesterday. Would have lost that game in the Pardew and the Carver, etc. because regardless of what people in the media say, the crowd stayed with the team yesterday. There was no grumbling, there was no negativity. I mean, obviously we're in a very, you know, specific part of the ground for stuff, but it I really couldn't hear anything from the rest of the crowd. Kind of people knew that, you know, if it was going to be a point, if that's all it was, then fine, we're going to continue the run. Now, that's one defeat, I believe, in 7 Premier League games, which came at Brighton. So one defeat in 7 games is fantastic form for a newly promoted side. And, you know, long may it continue. We're now going to Burnley in a big game, because Burnley are in and around us in this top half of the table, and you kind of feel that whoever wins that game will have a great chance to kick on for the rest of the season and kind of cement their place in that top 10. It's still early doors. We're still not a quarter of the way through the Premier League season yet, but certainly very, very promising signs. Ben and Si, I'll put it to you both. Team selection-wise, yesterday there was only kind of one thing which maybe raised eyebrows slightly, and that was the selection of Hayden ahead of Marino. I put a question to the listeners on Twitter just this morning. It was an 85% win for Marino must start every single home game. Where do you stand on that one?
I agree. I do think Marino should be starting. He's just a more all-round player. Gives us a more complete performance than Hayden, who at times, I mean, he has showed in the past that he can contribute getting forward, but he just seems reluctant to do it. And I don't know if that's just the role he's being asked to play, or if it's just he's maybe the confidence of playing in the team. He's more concerned about his defensive role to play, that he's just sort of stifling his creativity a bit in terms of pushing on. And I don't think, he has his part to play, don't get us wrong. I think he was probably one of our sort of most consistent players last season. They were brilliant. He's still fairly young, and definitely a player that's got a role to play. But I just feel Marino and Shelby give us the best chance of winning games. As well, I mean, I was looking at the stats. You don't really lose a lot with Marino in that team. If you're saying Hayden's in there to do the defensive role, well, actually, Marino's stats are better than Hayden. They've both played in all nine games. Obviously, they've sort of started, I think they started around the same number as well. Marino's made more tackles and more interceptions than Hayden has, so I think you can he can do that defensive role if needs be. And I think one of the biggest things is his height as well. He's really good in the air, so I actually think Marino's probably a better holding midfielder than Hayden. Yeah. So I think if you were going to be sort of doing it on that basis, then you can definitely make the argument that Marino still gets in the team ahead of Hayden.
Yeah.
But also just his passing and technical ability is just much, much better. So for me, I would say Marino should be getting his start. I think as well, one thing I noticed when he came on, obviously he came on in the, I think was it about the 60th minute or so, his first few touches were like he misplaced a pass. I think there was a couple of moments where you just felt like he's obviously just getting up to the speed of the game. Like a player that good, like he probably will take a little bit just getting used to the pace of the game or the style, and you just feel like if it's going to take him a few minutes to get to that, then just put him on from the start and give him the best opportunity to come on and do his best. But having said that, it's a great impact to have coming off the bench.
I think we've got to remember that he's 21 year old player, as is Hayden, or is he 22 now? Either way, they're both very young, and I think they will both have to share some of the responsibility. You can't have either of them really playing at home, starting every game. There's going to need to be, it's good to have the luxury of a choice there, because they're both very good players when they're on form. I think Rafa said after the game that Marino likes to get forward a bit more, and that's why he kind of thought, I'll stick with Hayden in the holding mid role just to see what these have got. And then when he realised actually they've gotten out, well, we might as well just get Marino on, because I think he knows that he's probably the better midfielder as it stands. But I can understand the cautious approach, and kind of, you know what you're going to get from Hayden. He's used to that job now. He's been here over a year, and he's just he's probably the more defensive of the two. I know what you're saying. Marino's capable of winning the ball back, but he's clearly good at getting forward, and I think we'll see a bit more of that now. But I think that's the only argument for Hayden keeping his place in them sort of games where it's going to be tight.
He's a bit quicker as well, isn't he? He's a bit better at filling in the full-back positions and sort of doubling up with the full-backs to help sort of the crosses coming and things like that, whereas Marino probably a bit slower, but maybe more combative, more powerful. But it's at the end of the day, I think it's one of those, if we're winning games, I mean, he didn't change the team from the previous week where we should have beaten Southampton. And I think it's just about building the confidence for players. I think you possibly run the risk of Hayden feeling like he's sort of the backup, and I think it's just encouraging to see Rafa sort of the man management style of it, of making sure that Hayden still feels a valuable part of the team.
Yeah, and I suppose, interestingly for me, when Marino did come on, that's when we saw the best of Shelby. So Shelby started, I wouldn't say he didn't have a poor game, no one had a poor game, but Shelby wasn't his normal self. He misplaced a couple of passes, which in itself is bizarre because he's so reliable normally with his passing. I think he passed one out of play by accident, which is like the first time I've seen him do that in a long time. And then Marino comes on and Shelby starts to operate in that kind of middle third, final third of the pitch, whereas before that, Shelvey was, you know, splitting the centre backs, our centre backs, picking up the ball, trying to spray passes. Palace with their two banks of four, or their four and their six, made that basically impossible. So, you know, I don't think Hayden necessarily did anything wrong yesterday. I can't, you know, think of anything. He just wasn't in the game enough. And I think Norman, who isn't able to make the podcast today, well, you know, watching the match with him and standing next to him, we were both saying from goal kicks, when Shelvey was picking the ball up in between the two centre-backs, or even if it was just general play, Hayden was a little bit lost. Whereas when Marino came on and Marino assumed that position, Shelvey was then demanding the ball from Marino, and we're further up the pitch and we were able to move the ball quicker. So, but you know, I'm sure Rafa knows what he's doing. Personally, I think Marino is such a talent. The more he is on the pitch for Newcastle United this season, the more good things will happen. It's simple as that. Yeah. Doesn't mean I don't think Hayden doesn't still have a massive role to play, and I'm still a huge fan of his. I'd much rather be going to Burnley with the two of them in. And I think I said, and it's not obviously not just me, but people have said that this lad, Marino, Ben, you called it, tackles excellent. He can play the ball. He can carry the ball really well. He can play brilliant through balls. When he added goals to his game, that's when the rest of the league and probably other teams in Europe will start to take notice when he starts adding goals. And here we go. I know we've got a little bit of luck, fortune, that MacArthur heads the ball onto his head, but he's still heading the ball towards goal. It's not that, which is brilliant. It's the leap. There are three Palace defenders that he comfortably outleaps them all. Yeah. You know, great ball in by Richie. What was that, three or four? Goals from corners now? Three goals from corners, is it?
Shelby's got two on there.
Lascelles, yeah. So,
I'm so used to shite corners at St James's Park that it's unbelievably refreshing to see, like, we've actually a threat from corners again, because how many years now has it been since, I don't know, Ribeiro's probably the last one who could put in a good corner, Ribeiro and Solana.
Yeah.
10 years of just not being a threat from these kind of set pieces.
Equally, we seem to have a bit more height in the team now as well, which we've been lacking. I mean, I remember when it was back far post to big tall Mike Williamson standing at the massive six foot or whatever it was, like, we've actually got a few like 6'2", 6'3" in there. Like, Marino's a big lad, so and Lascelles, obviously the two that have been getting the goals, like, that we're going to be a threat.
I'm pleased you mentioned Lascelles there. You know, War Flags did a fantastic display before the game, so congratulations to them. And I think he's actually mentioned it in his post-match interview, so I'm pleased he's feeling the love. It was a really good idea. It's probably because he was injured last season that he maybe didn't play his best football as good as we know he can do, but I still think that's, I think he got a lot of unfair criticism last season, but that's last season, never mind. What I noticed from yesterday with against the likes of Townsend and Zaha is how quick he was. Yeah. I think he actually, there was one tackle, I think it was first half, where Zaha on the left-hand side towards the Millburn stand looked like all day he was going to burn him, get away, and Lascelles got there, comfortably made the slide tackle. Mm-hmm. Really good. Ben, do you back these Lascelles for England cause, or do we just not care?
I thought you said Lejeune, then I was like, yeah, fully.
We'll come on
get him
next.
Get him signed up. Who, make sure he's got a, like, a fake English nan or something like that. it's probably, we've talked about it before, and I think it's probably still a bit early, and to be honest, I think it will put a lot of pressure on him unnecessarily. Having said that, I think he's a big character. He seems to be the type of lad that wouldn't make that big of an impact to him. I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. He seems to always speak really well, says all the right things. So, you look at the players he's against, and you say on his performances at the minute, he's by no means being embarrassed by anyone. There's not anyone that you would think is way out of his league and much better than him. So I think it's a fair question to be asking in terms of if he carries on playing the way he is. I think the only issue will come, and I think going back to what you were saying there about his struggles last season, is he's not a brilliant ball playing centre back. And you think about when the England performances the other week, like, that's where we lacked any sort of real sort of ability. Although, having said that, Joss Stones, War Joss, the best centre back playing defender in the world, didn't look particularly brilliant at times either.
Ball
playing,
yeah.
Sorry, yeah, ball. But it's probably a bit early. I think he's got to do it over a longer sustained period. I think if he's still playing at this level at the end of the season, then definitely get him on that plane, Gareth. But I don't know. I think it's a bit early for him yet.
So how impressed are you by Florian Lejeune, and is he now cemented his place ahead of Kieran Clarke, do you think?
Yeah, there's no way you can drop him off the back of those two performances, apart from the penalty at Southampton, which is a bit unlucky. He's been class, hasn't he? We got a bit carried away after the Spurs game when he played. What did he play? 40 minutes.
20.
I don't know.
30.
Okay.
it felt like it.
He played less than a half, but we thought he was so good that he was just like destined to be like our best defender in years. And now I'm convinced of that. Having watched two full games of him, he just is. I'm just talking about Lascelles, but I think he's just a superior footballer to all of them. He's clearly just like a. He's got an. Has he played international?
No.
Don't think any. But he's got that kind of just top playerness about him. I don't know what the word is. He looks like a proper top division player. When we've got a team kind of made up of young lads and championship players, Lejeune is like the finished article already. We've actually signed just a quality footballer. I like Kieran Clarke. I think he's been brilliant so far. But at this level, you just want someone like Lejeune to just kind of steady the defence. And I think the first thing on our shopping list in the summer was like a solid centre half. We've definitely got that. He should just play more games.
We talked about it before, the strength and depth of the squad. You know, you've got the likes of Clarke, Mbemba. The loads of them, really, that if they started on Monday, no one would particularly like worried or taken their back. Ben, do you want to make the case for Mitrovic starting?
I've seen a few things on Twitter saying that he should be starting. I mean, I think we said it last week. I think it was myself actually brought it up, saying for Hosolu up top. There's probably only so many games he's going to get away with where he doesn't really have a big impact. He was very, very quiet against Southampton and didn't really offer too much. I mean, I think he's a really good target man. He puts puts pressure on the opposition defences to know they're in a game when he's playing, because he'll challenge them in the aerial battles and things, and he brings other players into play and holds up really well. But it's just that I think it's what we accused Mitrovic of in the past, is he doesn't seem to be getting in the right areas to score the goals. He that's two games now, including the Palace one yesterday as well, where he's not had a chance. He's not really had a kick at sight of goal, and you just think we need people in the box. I mean, it's all right. While we're a threat from set plays, we're always gonna have that sort of potential chance of a goal. But actually, in games, if we're not sort of getting that opportunity, we need to at least be getting people into the box and in areas where we're going to give ourselves chances. We've had a couple of games now where that's not been showing. Now, yes, I think Mitrovic came on against West Ham, could have scored twice, did score. We'll not talk about the other issue, but I just think in terms of a playing sort of side of things, he looked like hungry. He came on and realised his chances are probably going to be minimal at the minute, but he made the most of his opportunity. So I think if you can see that hunger from him, and if he can sort of come in and contribute, there is a player in there that can have an impact on the team. And I don't think any player should feel like they're guaranteed a start. And I think you maybe got, I mean, not that he's thinking this, but Hosolu, if he carries on playing and not scoring, he's going to be thinking, well, if I'm not even scoring, I'm guaranteed to, and I'm still playing, I'm basically, it sort of takes the challenge out of his sort of mindset, I think. So it's good that Mitrovic, when he does get his opportunities, he comes on and does a job. I mean, he came on yesterday, okay, he didn't really have any chances and didn't do anything, but he was still on the pitch when we scored. And
it coincided with our... You know, Mitrovic coming on, like the other lads, coincided with the best spell. Yeah, and I mean, so that brings me nicely on to Big Modiyama Sai. Some impact there.
Yeah, who was having this conversation a few weeks ago about whether Modiyama should be coming back at number 10?
Me.
The only ones having it, except for Rafa as well, clearly. He was class, wasn't he? He gave her just something else. Perez, again. Just had another one of his quiet games where he just couldn't get a hold of the ball, just didn't really do much, and it I don't think Perez is that effective in a game where you've got 10 men behind the ball all the time, which is what we basically was up against. You need someone who's going to be a bit more direct, and that's what Diame gave us. He was just a bit more direct.
Just to give Perez some slight credit, I think Diame benefited from the fact that Perez had done all the running around, if that makes sense. Yeah. Perez had done that kind of running around job and burnt himself out, and Diame was able to come on against tired legs, and he was excellent. I'll pass it back to you there. Sorry, just want to point that out.
No, but he was. We were more direct by that point in the game, wasn't it? Those last 15 minutes, we were looking for the goal, and he was just the perfect player to have in there, like running in the channels, taking it forward, really positive, and just playing the number 10 role, which is what he did. He did well for us last year. You know, he didn't set the world alight, but he can play that position, and he can play it well. Where he's linking up everything, and he's running at defenders with the ball, like just really pleased that he's had that impact.
I think as well, you look at the substitutions that came on, Marino, Diame, Mitrovic, all powerful players, especially for the game plan that Rafa. So you're right, you've gone for the more mobile team. I think in terms of Hayden, Perez, not so much Hosslu, but I think obviously he is a bit more, maybe got a bit more mobility about him than say Mitrovic. Those players were on there to tire Palace out, and then we brought on the power players on towards the end when we started to go a bit more direct, started to get more of a presence up the field, and players that could hold up the ball and sort of work them out, strengthen them. I mean, against Kabay, Diame, like Kabay's not going to be able to do anything, especially on a yellow card as well.
Yeah.
It was just a really good decision, I thought, to bring them on and challenge them a different way than they've been used to all game. So I think that was a sort of a masterstroke from Rafa. He's got a plan, and he's obviously, I think, the way he's approaching games, he seems to sort of dissect the game up and say, right, we're going to play this game plan, we're going to sort of run around, tie them out, and then we'll bring on the sort of the big lads towards the end and go a bit more direct once they've tied out a bit, and those players can make a bit more of an impact. I mean, that's what Palace sort of were relying on, I think, in terms of their pace with Townsend and Zaha. They were hoping that they would get in behind where they use their pace, but actually we combated that with Hayden and Perez doing a lot of graft sort of defensively, and then once that threat had been nullified, it was a case of, right, we're going to take the game to them and just sort of bully them, really.
I'm pleased you mentioned Kabay and the yellow card there, because I don't actually know what you have to do to get sent off against Newcastle. I mean, that was an absolutely disgraceful challenge. The ball had gone 2 weeks ago. Do you know what I mean? The ball was gone. He was not trying to play the ball there. You know, Yedlin's on his standing foot on his left leg, and he scissors him either side, late, reckless, high. Just everything, all of the things you think about that are a red card. I think that tackle
ticks
the boxes and
control.
Shelby gets a 3-game ban guaranteed if he does.
Yeah, I think people are right to say that. Sorry, yourself included there. And like, that's Shelby Mitrovic. It's like, you know, it's like prison ship to Australia stuff. Like,
it's one where the ref's already got the card out. He doesn't even have to like think about it. He's just, I don't know what the fuck he was playing at. It's mental.
You know, I think it was 18 minutes into the game or something, and it's quite early, and we noticed, like, when he gave the foul, the ref sprinted over, like, which almost set all of the players off. Like, yeah. I don't know what the ref's doing there. Like,
I mean, I think we said at the time, like, he sprinted towards him as if, like, expecting it to be a massive kickoff, and it was the type of thing that you the ref does when he's going to send someone off. He gets in there straight away to try and calm everyone down, and I think he obviously acknowledged how bad a tackle it was, because he realised the players are going to fucking go for Kabay after that. And then to give him a yellow was just an absolute force.
I know. You know, Townsend, I mean, all of Palace's players had quiet games. Just really quickly on Palace, I just trying to find the right word here. The decision to take off Zaha by Hodgson was bizarre. Like, really, like, their most dangerous player, loads of pace, we're going to be pushing for the win. Maybe he was injured, maybe he's not fully fit, but I was really pleased to see him make that substitution.
Yeah.
Thanks, Roy. We'll give you that one. You know, the result in the end is what's most important. You know, we had 55% possession yesterday, so is it the first game this season that we've won, possibly, when having more of the ball than an opponent? You know, Stoke, West Ham, even Swansea all dominated possession against her. Liverpool, obviously, for the in Southampton. So we've ticked a few boxes with that win yesterday, in my opinion. And, you know, with you kind of get the feeling that Bournemouth, who had a great result yesterday at Stoke, we've been kicking on after a very slow start. That's the next home game. I kind of get the feeling Bournemouth will probably have more possession than us as well. So we might see a reversion back to what we know, with Perez's pressing being really important and Hosselu being in the game a little bit more as purely as a target man. But, you know, West Ham are probably the only really terrible team we've seen this season. Mm-hmm. You know, even Palace, despite their league position, great result last week, looked like a competent team, well-drilled, well-organised, which is what they're always going to be under Hodgson. Funny moment, this is the effects of alcohol. Norman, at the start of the game, was just convinced Dwight Gill was playing. And it took a good 3-4 minutes of conversation to be like, he's not on the pitch, mate. Dwight Gill is not, he's not even the squad, never mind on the pitch, and it was Perez. And he's like, who's that baldy bloke down there? Well, there isn't one. There isn't, like, he has hair.
And Gail's not bald either.
Yeah, like, it was just a very, you know, poor Norman, not here to defend himself. By the way, if you haven't read his match report on the True Faith website, please do. I'll put it in the description of the podcast. Really, really, as per, all of Norman's stuff's brilliant, but this another great write-up from Norman, who's travelled back to London last night after the game. Lads, I think we've just about gone through everything. Is there anything else you want to touch on?
No, I don't remember that much of the game.
Yeah, there isn't that much to remember. Side, I've watched highlights, and some of the things that have been included as highlights. I suppose it was a really positive result in terms of like Shelvey, Richie, and Atsu. They all had all right games, but they were all probably a little bit quiet. Mm-hmm. Which is, again, positive to be winning games when your main players aren't firing on all cylinders. And just, you know, I think Atsu's chance in the first half, which is probably the only chance in the first half when he's hit the side net, and it's kind of nice to see he's learned a little bit there from, you know, the previous chances when he's been in like that. He's held on the ball too long, and then we've ended up getting goal kicks or corners at best. He took that at the right time really early, and it was a really good shot. But, you know, all of the players.
It was a tough one, wasn't it? It was going to take something special to beat the keeper from that position.
One thing I'd say is that I've seen a few people mention this morning, well, it was a bad performance, and what if we'd lost it 1-0 or hadn't scored? It's like, how negative do you have to be?
Right.
How negative do you have to be to say that when, you know, to be saying, what if we'd lost 1-0 when a team hasn't had a shot against you? Like, you can't say could have easily lost that game 1-0 when the other team hasn't tested the keeper. You know, some games are going to be like, that's a Premier League, every game is going to be tight, and you know, there's no what if we lost 1-0, like, they didn't.
I suppose I'm not making my point, but I suppose the more pertinent question would be, what if we drew 0-0? Yeah. So what would your response be to that?
It'll be a disappointing result. I mean, Southampton was a disappointing draw in the end, but we wouldn't have said that before the game. I don't know, in my preview I said we'd win 3-0, but I also said that Palace are a team to be respected. They have got some good players, and they've got a new manager who's kind of reorganised them a bit. It wasn't going to be like a rout.
Even though you said it'd be 3-0.
Yeah, I just thought...
It's not a rout for this team.
you know, if we'd got a goal earlier, I think we would have opened them up. You know, we had to work hard for the goal. I thought if we'd got one earlier, and we didn't really have much, we only had one shot in the first half really with Atsu, but... yeah, if we'd got the goal earlier, it would have opened them up a bit. But 0-0, it would have been disappointing, but we could have understood it. I don't think it would have been time to kind of panic or have a go at the selection or anything. I think everything just went the way it should have done.
Yeah, fair enough. I can't disagree with any of that. You know, and like you said, an early goal might have made Palace come out and play a little bit more. And it's nice, isn't it, that, yes... Again, we'll have to emphasise early days. We're still not a quarter of the way through the season. But it's nice, isn't it, that we're now playing established Premier League teams like Palace, who spent a lot of money on their squad compared to us. I mean, you know, Van Aanholt and Schlupp, £14 million each. You know, more expensive than anything we had on display yesterday by an absolute mile. Kabay, you know, £14 million, I think, something like that. Benteke not playing, obviously. But, you know, Palace are coming to us. And they're the ones, and we're talking about us is trying to open them up and break them down, because they're the ones, they're coming to St James's Park thinking a point's a fantastic result yesterday, and he did play for a point, Hodgson. He didn't get it. And then if I'm a Palace fan now, I'm frustrated that we went and shut up shop as much as we did, and it didn't work out, because you are always likely going to come, when you have opposition players as good as the likes of Richie Marino and you give away corners at the end of games, there's a chance you'll concede. So, you know, we did what we had to do. We got the 3 points, and I think that's, I agree with you, Si, that point about, you know, would it have been a bad team selection or a bad way to play the game if we'd have not got that goal. I'm with you on this. I think I think we did what we had to do, and when you're playing a team as defensive as that, who are playing a 4-6 formation for a lot of the game, there's only so much you can do without taking great risks and leaving yourself open to the counter attack.
I think as well, it wouldn't have been a bad point. I mean, yes, you think on paper at home against a Palace side that's really struggled, they've lost the first 7 games.
We can see why they haven't scored a goal away from home, can't you?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it was always going to be a fairly scrappy affair. So I think had we've got a point, I still say it wouldn't have been a bad performance, because as long as you're not losing points to these teams, and if it would have lost, that would have been a travesty. It would have been a really, really bad result. But a point against a side like that, that's probably going to be in the bottom sort of 6 based on what we've seen so far this season. As long as you don't lose points to these teams, we should be comfortably finishing ahead of Palace, and that's amazing considering the resources the two teams are dealing with. Like, to be saying at this point, yeah, I feel like we're comfortably going to finish ahead of them, it wouldn't have been a bad point necessarily, because I think there's going to be other games whereby we'll come up against sort of teams that have got bigger ambitions. You've mentioned Bournemouth obviously coming soon. The Stoke game, I mean, even Southampton to an extent, they're the games where if we can nick the points playing the counter-attacking sort of defensively solid football, then that's where this team's going to make its living and going to pick up its points. So I think as long as we're not losing, I mean, you've got to remember as well, we've had 2 results against Huddersfield and Brighton where really we should have got points out of those games, and to lose 3 was really bad. So I would have taken a point against those 2 teams away from home, and I think at Palace again, it's one of those, just don't lose the game, just get something out of it.
Well said. A good day all round for everybody listening, I'm sure. And we'll move on to Burnley next week. Got 2 podcasts for you coming up this week. I recorded the 88-89 season review with Mark Corby and Norman Riley yesterday. Absolutely fantastic listen. That'll be up probably midweek, and then towards the end of the week, Thursday, Friday, we'll have the Burnley preview as usual. So thanks for listening, everybody. Fantastic position we'll find ourselves in, and we'll speak to you soon.